This is the Patriots All 22 podcast on the CLNS Media Network, the leading online provider of audio video coverage for the five-time Super Bowl champion New England Patriots.
Welcome into a new edition of the Patriots All 22 podcast. I am Evan Lazar, joined as always by Adam Kirchin. And Adam, we have the Super Bowl champion New England Patriots to break down here, six-time Super Bowl champions. It's hard to believe that this team this year got to this point, but they found themselves late in the season, and I think more than any other Belichick team, maybe they found it later in the year than what we're used to, but here we are.
Yeah, I think that's what it was. In my opinion, they just were a different team in the playoffs than they were the rest of the season. They were sharper. They seemed more focused. They just executed better. You know, in the Super Bowl, it was such a complete defensive effort that you really couldn't have asked for anything more. And I think it was an incredible game on Sunday. You know, obviously it wasn't like a offensive explosion or anything like that, but the defense controlled that game so completely. I don't think there was anybody that saw that type of performance coming, and that probably had to be one of the most satisfying Super Bowl wins for them, in my opinion, just because there's so many spots during the year where they're either just spotty or didn't look as good as they could be, and then they played as well as they could when they needed to, and they won the title. It was sort of a great finish for them, and it had to be really satisfying, I would think.
Definitely, and they won a game where Tom Brady and the offense wasn't at its best, and they were still able to figure out a way to win, which I think is also one of the more satisfying ways that they've won a Super Bowl. Because if you look in the past, Brady has had his ups and downs, and obviously the Atlanta and the Seattle Super Bowls, but in the fourth quarter or when it mattered in that Atlanta game late in the game in the second half, he was, GOAT Brady. He was the MVP of the game, and he was as good as it gets. But in this game, he really didn't come out of it until late, and it was the defense, like you said, that controlled it. And just my initial thoughts on it just are, one, I kind of felt like the Patriots won this game before it even started in a lot of ways, because of the way that the Rams offense decided to just kind of stick to what they do. And they didn't really adapt in the game plan sense to what the Patriots were going to throw at them, and then they didn't adapt in the game. They ran their 11 personnel. They ran their misdirection and kind of disguise plays. They did everything that we kind of talked about, and you and I could kind of tell on film that this is what their offense was about. So that kind of shows you what Bill Belichick and Brian Flores have a way bigger understanding of football and X's and O's than you and I combined. So to have that, for us to see the predictability of the offense, I'm sure it was even more predictable from their point of view. And then McVay never really kind of altered his thinking or altered his plan. And it was almost like the Rams thought that they could show up to the game on Sunday offensively and just beat the Patriots defense because they were better and they would execute better.
Right. There was no counter. It was like the Rams didn't have anything else.
No.
You know what I mean?
Belichick said in the mic'd up segments, he was like, they got nothing. Like, we know exactly what they're running. We know exactly what they're trying to do, and they have no zig to our zag.
Yeah, it was almost you ever see when a team plays like a team that runs the option or the wishbone?
Yeah.
And that's all they run. And then, they cover the pitch man, they cover the dive, they cover the, they cover those three things, and then then it's like, well, we don't have anything else. I think the Rams did a few things. Like, there was a couple times where I thought they tried to get the ball out quicker, and there was that wide receiver screen that that was almost picked off kind of, but I mean, it seemed like everything they did, the Patriots were either ready for it or just barely missed out on it. It was as perfect a defensive game plan as you can get. And as everybody's been saying, it's true. It's just like, how much do you want to you know, contrast from last year's Super Bowl, you know, they couldn't make a single stop.
Yeah.
I mean, would you rather have a shootout, you know, like that, or would you rather have a game like this? And, you know, I mean, at the end of the day, Patriots fans would just rather have a win, but there is something especially satisfying when you can take away what the other team does best and they just don't have any, you know, answer for it. And that's kind of what happened.
Yeah, this McVay offense, as good as it's been since he took over there, has kind of, I think teams have kind of figured it out a little bit in the second half of the season here. Now, obviously, a big part of that is losing a guy like Cooper Kupp and Todd Gurley not being Todd Gurley. So kind of the personnel has diminished maybe a little bit for the Rams. But starting with that Lions game, which I think was a big-time blueprint for the Patriots in this game, you can see a lot of the same things that Patricia did in that Lions-Rams game is what the Patriots did in this game. But you had the Lions game, you had the Chicago game, you had obviously the game against the Eagles, and then, you know, even a little bit against the game against the Saints in the playoffs. It kind of felt like people had sort of figured out McVay maybe a little bit, and especially those quarters coverages and the split safety stuff seemed to kind of take away some of that big play offense that they had. The other thing I wanted to point out, I don't know how much of the mic'd up stuff you've watched, but it's all awesome. So people that have watched it should just go watch it 30 times. You can pick up like a little thing here or there from everything that you kind of get out of that entire experience, whether it's the Inside the NFL stuff or the NFL Network, NFL Films, mic'd up stuff. But the biggest thing that I kind of took away from that, and it's, you kind of have to take it with a grain of salt because the producers obviously pick and choose, you know, sound bites that they're putting in there. But the first thing was that McVay seemed a little bit less analytic and a little bit less detail-oriented in his approach on the sideline specifically. And before the game, he was very much, you know, I don't really care about the praise of Bill Belichick. He had a meeting with Bill Belichick before the game where he's just kind of saying how great Bill is for like five straight minutes.
Yeah, but
that's, I think, just kind of his personality. Like, so I don't think that that's really anything that I look into much. But one thing that he did say was he said that, you know, he's really interested to see their plan. And then he's also said that the Patriots morph themselves more than any other team week to week and game plan to game plan. And it was just interesting to me that he was able to point that out to Belichick himself. But then when the game started, he wasn't able to, you know, pick up on the fact that the Patriots weren't going to be the same aggressive man coverage defense that they were against Kansas City. Right. That didn't make sense against his team. So right. He was able to kind of have the analytical perspective to see what Belichick does great, but he wasn't able to then adapt it and put it into practice to kind of get his team ready for the game.
No.
And when you look at the Patriots sideline and that thing, it's all football, you know, it's all X's and O's. What can we do next? This, that, the other thing. And, you know, getting every bell just multiple times to kind of keep it up because he knew the offense was struggling a little bit and they needed that defense to play well. And McVay's sideline, it's like, go Todd, go Brandon. Like, he's like cheering on his team. And I think, and I want to say this because I think it's really important in this little spiel that I'm making here. I think that the NFL Films people did McVay wrong in this scenario.
Oh, yeah.
Because I'm sure that Sean McVay coaches, you know?
Like, he doesn't just say, go guys.
Yeah, like I'm positive.
Try harder.
Right. Like, I'm positive he's not just the clapper. Like, yeah. I know that there's more to him than that because he's too good for that not to be the case. But to see the difference, Belichick's like talking to the refs about the roof closing before the game, and he's all pissed off because he doesn't know if the roof is going to be completely closed for kickoff, and he's worried about the wind factor.
Oh my god.
Yeah, like these are the, and McVay's over there.
Yeah, I haven't seen these yet.
Yeah, you should watch it. There's a bunch of stuff on Twitter that kind of clips out the best parts of it so you don't have to watch the whole thing. And so Belichick's talking to the ref on one sideline, talking to Perry, I forget his first name, but the head ref, and he's complaining, right? He's like, what do you mean you don't know if the roof is going to be completely closed? Like, if the roof isn't completely closed by kickoff, then there might be a wind factor, and that could this, that, and the other thing, right? And then you go on the other side, and McVay is talking, I believe it was to Zach Taylor, who's now the head coach of the Cincinnati Bengals, who was the Rams quarterbacks coach this year. And he turns to Zach Taylor and he goes, I can't wait to see what their plan is.
Huh.
And like, so Belichick is on one sideline, you know, complaining about a roof. And right. talking with special teams coach Joe Judge about, okay, well, we don't know if the roof is going to be completely closed, so let's kick that way so it's not a factor, you know, regardless.
Everything mapped out, man.
And McVay is on the other sideline, like, oh, I can't wait to see what Belichick's going to do to beat us.
Like, wow, the Super Bowl's going to be cool, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, man. And I kind of felt like,
yeah, that's a little weird.
I kind of felt like the Rams thought in a lot of ways that they were just going to show up for this game and win. And Belichick, on the other hand, and this is a total opposite of what, let's say, Tom Coughlin would have done or what Doug Peterson did last year, because those guys were ready. You know, Belichick on the other sideline is like talking about, you know, the roof closing. And he's right. huddling up his players and coaching them and saying, you got to do this, you got to do that. You got to, you know, get vertical in the pass rush and in the running game. We got to make sure that we got the doubles down. We got to make sure that everybody's doing their jobs. You know, all the Belichick kind of speak that you hear all the time. And McVay is telling Jared Goff and late in the game after he throws the pick to Stephon Gilmore that he's doing a great job.
Wow.
And it's like, I don't think Jared Goff was doing a great job, Sean.
No, he definitely wasn't. I don't think there was a lot of great job when it comes to the passing game.
Yeah. But anyways, I don't want to get too caught up in all the mic'd up stuff because it's so selective, right?
Yeah.
Like the producers can just handpick. They record the whole game and they can only take like so much out of it, and they don't want to give away too much of the X's and O's of what the teams are talking about. So maybe McVay's kind of rants on the sideline, like Belichick's his coaching moments, are too detailed to use. Because Belichick, they were able to kind of pick and choose spots where he was being a little bit more generic and not like, you know, getting into like, you know, okay, the number three is over here, you know, like getting into like real X's and O's.
Right.
And so they were able to do a little bit of that. But I just thought it was interesting to hear the different – McVay seemed like a guy that was happy to be there, to be honest with you. And like – Belichick was there to win, and it obviously made a huge difference. But all right, we've talked enough about like the philosophical stuff in this game, and let's get into some of the X's and O's here. And I think that really got to start with the defense. I know Julian Edelman won the MVP. It is what it is. He deserved it.
Yeah, but
the defense was what won them this game. And I think that, you know, I wrote about it yesterday, and the coolest part about it for me from the defensive game plan standpoint was just how different it was from some of the things that the Belichick defenses have done in the past. Aggressive, getting upfield in the front seven, playing more zone on the back end. Just they made a game plan in 2 weeks that best suited them to beat the Rams, and they didn't really care about what their kind of tendencies were.
Yeah, I liked how aggressive they were up front and, like, in the back, just sort of sitting back, and then when the ball was in the air, coming downhill hard and hitting guys. You know, like, it was there was a physicality aspect to this game plan that I thought was so effective that, you know, I forget what exactly the play was, but you know how – you know, when they boot around and drag the tight end across, I think it was Van Noy
who slammed the
tight end down. Or
Reynolds, yeah.
It was Reynolds, yeah. So yeah. Like, it was that type of game plan the entire time, where it was like it was physical, it was aggressive, it was downhill. It was almost as if they were taking the game to them as opposed to waiting for them. Waiting for the Rams offense to do something and react to it. It was very attacking. It was very aggressive, and it was kind of what the Patriots had been saying all year about what a Flores defense is like. So I think you have to, for as much credit as we give Belichick, I mean, I think that's Flores' fingerprints on there. I just loved it. I thought, you know, there was nothing that the Rams did that was easy that they could get away with, you know, simply. Everything that they tried was completely smothered. You know, yeah. there was just a ton of pressure and hitting and physicality to everything that the Rams tried. And so it was more of a, to me, like a tone setting type of thing. Right from the beginning, the Rams knew that there was nothing good that they were going to do that was going to be easy. It was, everything had to come with a little bit of a fight. And the Patriots sort of just took that fight to them. And it was obvious from the very first snap.
Yeah, I mean, really, it started with the run defense, that aggressiveness and that attacking mentality. And a lot of the players after the game, Landon Roberts, spoke to him for a little while. He was just like, the game plan was just to attack. Be aggressive, come downhill all day long, and we weren't going to let this running game that's an outside zone scheme that's a little bit slow developing, and they like to hit those cutbacks, you know, with Gurley where he's like kind of going outside and then he cuts it back inside and those types of things. They weren't going to let it get going, and they really used what some people have called it a 6-1 front. I think it's more like a 4-3 even, but regardless, they use that four down lineman with the two guy outside linebackers standing up on the edge. Essentially, they were in like almost a goal line package on early downs to really just take away that running game, because they knew that everything that the Rams do from a passing standpoint in the play action passing game specifically starts with their running game, because they want to set it all up with the run, and then they use all that misdirection and the play actions and the bootlegs and stuff like that off of the run when you get so aggressive to stopping the running game because you're getting shredded by it that you overreact to it and you get, you know, guys out of the position and then you get openings downfield. And the Patriots just said, listen, we're not going to two gap. We're not going to hold the point of attack like they have in the past with our big guys like Danny Shelton and Malcolm Brown. We're going to have Danny Shelton and Malcolm Brown shoot gaps and get vertical. And you could hear Belichick on the sideline and one of the mic'd up things just saying, get vertical, keep getting vertical, get upfield.
Right.
And that was the game plan all along. And that's how you stop a zone scheme, is you get upfield, you shoot gaps, you get in the backfield, you don't allow any of those cutback lanes, and you stay gap disciplined so that you can, you know, kind of smother the running game. That's where it started. And then the second thing that they did, and it wasn't necessarily that they've never played zone this year, because they've had games where they've played some zone a heavy amount, but just compared to the AFC Championship game to this game, where in the AFC title game, they were man 80% of the time. You know, it really wasn't until the second half when they had a lead that they started playing a little bit more zone. And this game, they were 50-50 man zone. They played a lot more zone coverage in the back end. And I think that took the Rams by surprise, too, because in the Chargers game and the Chiefs game, really all playoffs, the Patriots have been an aggressive cover one man team. And then they came out of this game and they're playing quarters. And it's like, okay, well, what do you know, this isn't what we expected. And the interesting thing is that it wasn't what they expected, but it is what other teams like the Bears and the Detroit Lions have done in the past against the Rams to kind of slow them down. So the Patriots just borrowed from those game plans and put it into practice against Goff. And really the biggest thing was, you know, we want to make sure that they take away the big plays, because this offense is extremely explosive. It was second in the league on passes of 20 more yards just to the Chiefs. And they were really able to keep everything in front of them and not allow any of those big plays. Now, some of that came from, you know, Jared Goff and Brandon Cooks giving them some, you know, a drop by Cooks and a bad throw by Goff on that wide open coverage bust and stuff like that. But the quarters strategy of dropping four guys deep against those play action passes worked to perfection for the Patriots. And they also put Jonathan Jones at safety for some of this game, which was a really interesting wrinkle, because they knew that the Rams, especially off that bootleg stuff, were going to run crossers across the field a lot of the time. Right. So they put Jones, who's super fast, obviously, as that robber in the middle of the field to just run across with those crossers and not let the Goff hit those. So that, I mean, the game plan was just perfect. They knew exactly what the Rams were going to do, and they did it. And finally, the last point I wanted to make was just the five-man pressure schemes that they used. A lot of, whether you consider it blitzing or not, basically the linebackers all day long, Dante Hightower and Kyle Van Noy, were pass rushers. for the most part. And they were just coming at Jared Goff, and they were using these twists and games up front that we've seen them pretty much use all the second half of the season, and they just kind of did it again in this one. Really, the pass rush was no different than what we've seen over the last couple of weeks. It was pretty much the same as what they've been doing all year, but the coverage was much different, and a lot of the players after the game were saying this could not have been a more different game plan coverage-wise than what we did to the Chiefs. You know, they completely reinvented themselves in 2 weeks.
Yeah, yeah, and that thing about keeping everything in front of them, it did. I thought two things. It prevented the big play, but at the same time, it allowed them, like we've been saying, to again come down on these guys when the ball was in the air.
Yeah,
and really be physical. If they caught it or if the ball was in the air, and to sort of break up the pass. It was sort of like, all right, you know, here, take this for a little bit, and then as soon as the ball gets thrown, we're coming down and we're hitting you. I just thought, it seemed to me that the Rams just didn't see that coming at all.
No.
From from the way that they were playing, they seemed a little bit confused. There was a bit of an alligator arms, feel to some of their players. They didn't have that confidence as soon as the game got going. Of, you know, okay, what we're doing is working. They were just sort of stunned and shook by the whole Patriots game plan, because they didn't. You could just tell they just didn't expect that at all.
No, I don't think they expected it, and I don't think that Sean McVay really had any, you know, any idea of changing what he does.
No,
you know, I think that he wanted to come out in this game and just say, "Hey, we're the Rams. We run three wide receiver sets. We run a lot of misdirection, and it works against everybody.
Right,
it's gonna work against you guys." And that was kind of the mentality. And there was no game plan wrinkles. There was nothing new that McVay threw at them. And throwing out of the three wide receiver sets all game long was just so predictable. It was so predictable. And the Patriots with the play action passes and mixed in there. I mean, there were times on the sideline where Belichick's just calling out play action. He's just like, all right, this we think is going to be play action, right? Yeah. And like him and Flores just have like the exact call against it. And it just... It seemed like that all game long, like the Patriots were just in the headset of Jared Goff. And I think that Goff also, you know, he played a terrible game. Like, if we're going to be honest, he was awful. You know, there were some missed opportunities for sure where he missed some open receivers. He obviously missed Brandon Cooks on, was late to Brandon Cooks on the coverage bus on the Jason McCourty pass breakup. But there's a few plays that I wanted to point out that just, you know, were just key plays in this game that were made by the Patriots defense and not necessarily the other way around. And the first one, it starts with the Stephon Gilmore interception, which was really only the second time the entire game of the Patriots ran a zero blitz. They really only did it twice the whole game. And they just picked Brian Flores, just picked the absolute perfect time to call that play. And the funny thing is that it seemed like the Rams like kind of knew that it was coming a little bit. And they got their protection in order, and Goff had the protection in order, but the Patriots just brought one more guy, and it was Daron Harmon, and the running back had to make a decision: do I take McCourty or Harmon? He picked the inside guy, and Harmon got there, and Goff just threw it up.
Yeah, it was a big moment. It's kind of a risk too, because you know if you don't get there, or if you know if that's a risky play at that part of the field.
Yeah.
Because, you know, if you get a completion right there, there's a touchdown, you know.
There's a boomer bust play, yeah.
Yeah. So that type of risk and all that is, you know, has to be, has to be seen as sort of just like a very, you know, turning point type of decision. You know, like you think of these things during the game as, you know, you know, without, you know, a time of, you know, when you can make it. I'm not phrasing this right. What I'm saying is like, you know, you have a certain amount of time to call a play. And, yeah. You know, if, you know, a lot of times as fans, we think, you know, well, obviously this is going to be the call. But that is, you know, putting so much on your defense to make a play when you have that many guys going after the passer and that few guys in coverage, and you're putting so much on the players, and it's a lot of trust, and they executed. And for him to come up with the interception is big, but at the same time, it's also just everybody, you know, going with that same philosophy the whole game of just pressure, you know, attack, being proactive, not letting the Rams take the game to you. And that's sort of what happened all game. And it just fell in line with what the entire philosophy was from the defensive side of the ball. It's funny how it never broke down. It never broke down at one point at all.
And I'm sitting there and I'm waiting, like, and we're watching the game and I'm like, at some point in time, the Rams are going to make a play, right? Like, at some point in time, there's going to, and it almost happened, you know, Brandon Cooks almost caught a couple of touchdowns, but it was like, at some point in time, there's going to be a bust or somebody's going to get beat one-on-one or whatever the case may be. They can't possibly pitch a perfect game. Right. In this scenario, and they did.
And on that play, you can't make a mistake because it's such a high risk play.
Yeah.
Send that many guys in, and if you make one little misstep here or there, if you're 1 yard behind the receiver, if you're 1 yard too slow to the quarterback, that's a touchdown. And so it's an incredible amount of confidence that Flores is putting in his players to say, okay, we want this as the clock is ticking down. Like, hey guys, do this. You know, I mean, I can only imagine what was going through their minds when they get that call for that. Maybe they, you know, enjoyed the you know, the challenge of it, but it's not an easy thing to pull off, and it can't be really understated.
Yeah, Devin McCourty after the game was talking about it with a couple of us reporters, and he said that all week long Flores said, I'm going to save the zero blitz. We're not going to use it a ton this week, but there's going to be a big moment in the game where I'm going to call it and it's going to work. And we're going to save it for that moment. And I, this is not a joke. And then he said, and then so Devin McCourty said that he got the call and they got the call in the huddle, and he just looked at his brother and was like, holy shit, this is what coach was telling us all week long, that he was going to call it like in a big moment, and you know, it was going to matter. And then he said Gilmore picked it off, and Devin just said he like couldn't believe it. Like, he couldn't believe the foresight by Flores in that situation to know a week earlier that call and that moment was going to come up in the game, and they were going to call it, and it was going to work because the Rams, you know, hadn't really seen it all game. It was pretty cool to just hear him say that, you know, this was something they talked about all week, that they weren't going to bring a ton of extra pressure. They brought those 5-man pressures, but they weren't going to bring that 6th guy a whole lot. And then they did it in like the biggest moment of the game. The other big play I wanted to point out was actually early in the game. It was the first third down of the game. And I thought that it set the entire tone and the chess match kind of what the Patriots were going to do. And it was a crossing route that Patrick Chung blew up. And Adrian Claiborne came through the middle and got pressure on Jared Goff on a tackle and stunt. And biggest thing was pre-snap. The Patriots came out in a split safety look. They had both safeties up top. And then you can see Goff comes to the line with about 20 seconds left, and you can see McVay make a change in his headset. And McVay calls an audible. Goff checks to something else at the line of scrimmage, and the Patriots check their coverage, and they went to a single high safety look. and the Rams called a cover two beater because that's what the Patriots were in pre-snap, and then it ended up being cover one, and Chung blows up Josh Reynolds on the crosser. Adrian Claiborne puts Jared Goff on his ass in the pocket, and that kind of, I thought, set the entire tone for the entire game.
Yeah, which is sort of what people hold against that that system, that the way that the Rams go about it, right?
Yeah.
The
Patriots put it all on Goff. They said they disguised everything up pre-snap. They didn't let Sean McVay. It got to the point where at the end of the game, McVay was just like, we're just going to go tempo because they're not giving me anything to make the audibles anyways.
Right.
So like, just screw that plan. And they ended up actually just going with a little bit of like a no huddle.
Yeah. It's it makes you just wonder if McVay is going to rethink his sort of approach from this and say,
I think he's got to.
Yeah. I mean, because at this point, after a game like that, obviously now there's going to be copycats of the Patriots now. It really failed this game, obviously, but it's another, if you want to look at it from the other side, it's just another way of the Patriots seeing, what a team does well and sort of playing that cat and mouse game to the very end and really executing it well. I think that whole thing of putting it on Goff it worked out well. They, I would think too that, I guess McVay just must have not have seen any of that coming. I mean, do you?
So weird.
It seems strange that like he couldn't, sort of move something to the side or try a different tact. He just went with the same approach the whole way.
Yeah, for a guy that, and I wonder. Some of it too. I mean, just for a guy that is so, everyone thinks he's like the next Bill Walsh or something like that.
Right.
He did not coach a good game. I mean, let's just put it to like he coached a very vanilla, very basic for the Rams at least type of game and a very predictable one. But I wonder how much of it is what Jared Goff can handle and how much they can put on Jared Goff's plate, and that maybe they practice this type of offense that they've ran all year so much that going to something else is not necessarily something that they felt comfortable for Goff, knowing where to go with the ball and knowing how to run a different kind of offense, because it seemed to me like the best approach for the Rams, and it was apparent in the stats too. Warren Sharp of Sharp Analytics did a great breakdown of this. Going to a two tight end set with Higbee and Gerald Everett on the field at the same time and putting Goff under center and kind of going with more of a heavy formation or a heavy personnel grouping, the two tight end sets have given the Patriots defense trouble all year long.
Right.
They've had trouble covering tight ends, and they had trouble covering that when they did it. I think it was 6 pass attempts and 12 personnel with 2 tight ends on the field. Goff was averaging something like almost 9 yards per attempt on those 6 plays. And against the 11 stuff, the Patriots were holding him to like 6 yards per attempt. And it just seemed like it was obvious that that was probably where they should have went. That's where the Patriots offense, and we'll get to that in a second. That's where the Patriots offense ended up going, was putting Gronk and Dwayne Allen on the field and kind of, changing up and making the defense go into their base personnel. And the Patriots defense was just able to just kind of do what they planned all for the last 2 weeks, all game long. And there was nothing new. There was nothing that they didn't expect or didn't anticipate Sean McVay doing. And I wonder how much of that is maybe, Jared Goff mentally, with the mental part of the game, isn't quite there yet.
Yeah, it could be. I don't know. You just kept waiting for that point for the Rams to come out in something that you didn't recognize.
Yeah.
And then that point never came.
Yeah. So, all right. Let's go to the Patriots offense, because obviously there's a ton to talk about there as well. And through three quarters, you could probably say a lot of the same things about the Patriots and that we just said about the Rams, at least. And I think the one thing, though, I will say before we dive into this is just that, you know, the Patriots offense actually moved the ball a little bit in this game.
There was
some instances, especially, you know, there's three drives that you can point to that they should have had points and they didn't. Obviously, the Brady interception on the first drive of the game, they came out and they moved the ball right down the field.
On the ground.
Right down their throats. And they should have scored, obviously, at least 3 points on that drive, and Brady threw an ill-advised interception. Steven Gostkowski missed a field goal, 46-yarder that he usually makes. Although not in Super Bowls, because he's jinxed in Super Bowls for some reason. And then obviously they got stopped on 4th-and-1 in Rams territory as well. So those three drives, you know, you pick up that first down. Brady doesn't throw that pick. The field goal goes through for Gostkowski. You're talking about a lot more points early on in this game before the fourth quarter. But I mean, Wade Phillips' plan was almost as good as Belichick's.
Yeah.
It probably was as good as Belichick's. It just the Patriots threw something at them in the fourth quarter that nobody really saw coming with the empty personnel with two tight ends on the field. So that's what the difference was that McDaniels adjusted and McVay didn't, but the plan that Wade Phillips had was spectacular.
Yeah, I think it also, their front came through as advertised too.
Yeah.
With guys like Donald and Sue and guys like They were able
to. Especially like Donald, they put a lot of attention on. So he kind of had a quiet game because he was getting double and triple teamed at times. But Stewart was an absolute monster.
Yeah, he was.
Yeah.
And, that limits a lot of what you can do. I thought that the Patriots ran the ball very well when they wanted to. Like that first drive, I was very impressed with how they were doing it. They were doing it to different areas. I liked how they mixed in the jet sweep with Patterson.
I thought Rams were ready for that, huh?
Yeah.
Not having that.
Yeah. So I thought that first drive was working pretty well, and then they sort of it was an empty set, right? So like I didn't necessarily think that was the smartest thing to do when you were moving the ball really well on the ground. But whatever, it didn't work. I think the Patriots did a lot of different things in terms of, if this doesn't work, we're going to move on to this. There was one drive where they tried to work in James White a little bit more.
Yeah.
But there was a third down pass near midfield that just didn't connect. I think you have to give a lot of credit to the Rams on some of these plays. I mean, Marcus Peters had some great coverage on a lot of these plays. I thought he had a very good game, even though he had the hold that he got away with on that one play.
Yeah.
Their defense was able to force a lot of things to the outside sometimes. But Edelman, you know, again, like, you know, the guy found ways to get open.
Couldn't guard him. Couldn't cover him.
And so, you know, it's – I don't know how you you game plan to stop a guy like Edelman sometimes, because you know if there's a zone, he'll find an opening in it. If it's man to man, he'll just shake a guy out of his shoes. He really carried the offense for certain points of the game. But I do think, unlike the Rams, it wasn't like the Patriots weren't moving the ball at times for lack of breadth of plays. You know what I mean? They were throwing a lot of stuff at them. But it was just that, you know, the Rams were making good plays and Phillips had good counter moves to what they were doing.
Yeah. One thing that Phillips did that was apparent was just he didn't let Brady read the field pre-snap and just predetermine where he was going with the football. The interception was a great example of that, where the Rams were in cover three, and all day long when a defense is in cover three and the middle of the field gets shut down, Brady will just take those quick hitters to the perimeter, and he'll just take that 5 or 6 yards. And what the Rams were doing was they were sliding their slot defenders underneath those routes. And it was a really cool game plan. I haven't really seen it done a ton, but they almost like inverted their coverage where they had four guys across the intermediate level and then three guys deep, and they rushed four, obviously. And what they were doing was is they were dropping guys directly into the flats. And they were taking away like the little dump offs to the running backs and the little quick hitches to Chris Hogan or Philip Dorsett on the outside. Yeah. And they weren't allowing the ball to go there. And that really caused Brady to kind of force the ball into the middle of the field to Gronkowski, to Edelman. And even though Edelman was wide open all day, that certainly helped. But really the plan, it seemed like, for Phillips was, all right, I know I have three things I need to stop. I need to stop Gronk, Julian Edelman, and James White. And he was able to stop, for the most part, Gronk, certainly James White, and he kind of just lived with Edelman killing them.
Right.
And it almost worked. You know, it really was very close to working. And, you know, you go look at the game and you're like, all right, well, Edelman, you know, they had no answer for Edelman. That's absolutely true. But really, until that final the touchdown drive late in the fourth quarter, Gronkowski was quiet for most of the game, except for a few catches early, and they completely eliminated James White from the game. So those two things, you know, really I thought stood out to me as, you know, he did a ton of stuff, Wade Phillips, to really prevent Brady, because he watched the Chargers game and he watched the Chiefs game, and he was like, Brady is just making these decisions before the ball is even snapped. He's looking at the coverage and he's seeing where the coverage is going. Or, you know, in that Chiefs game, a lot of the time in the fourth quarter and overtime, he was reading one player because he knew the coverage and he was like, all right, if the safety is going to go this way, I'm throwing that way. If he goes this way, I'm going the other way. And it was that simple. And so what Wade Phillips did was he made everything look the same. He kind of muddled up the secondary, and whether it was man or zone, when the Patriots traveled guys across the formation, which they usually do to get a tell of whether it was man or zone, they would travel with the player and then play zone.
Right.
And stuff like that. So it was a lot of like little things that actually the Patriots have done to Mahomes a lot twice this year, to kind of not give him anything away pre-snap and force Brady to read everything post-snap, which he's still very good at, obviously. And there wasn't a ton of like questionable decisions. I would say that there was like two or three plays where I kind of thought, oh, why did Brady throw it there instead of here? But it really wasn't like that egregious. It was just really good coverage on the back end and a really good plan. And he just took all the easy stuff away from Brady, and he forced Brady to beat him with, you know, high level throws.
Yeah.
And late in the game, obviously, that's what happened. And, you know, just getting into that now, I think the biggest thing was obviously the adjustment that McDaniels made to go to what was really 22 personnel. They had Burkhead, Devlin, Dwayne Allen, Gronkowski, and Edelman on the field on that drive, the touchdown drive, and or at least on the part of the, you know, the three plays in a row where they ran Hosweye Juke three times straight. and the Rams defense didn't know how to stop it. It was pretty cool. I mean, that was like the ultimate kind of chess match move there by McDaniels, where he got the Rams in their base defense, he got that extra linebacker on the field, and then he went empty from a heavy personnel grouping.
Yeah, that was strange. You know, you don't see that every day.
No.
I mean, that's one of those things that, you know, the Patriots had in their holster and the Rams didn't.
Yeah.
You know, it was the Rams never had that extra thing that they could throw out there, because, hey, none of this is working. None of our stuff is working. Let's try something that they maybe haven't seen. They didn't have that. They didn't even try that. The Patriots at least had something in the holster and they went with it. And it worked. I mean, it was, again, it was another reason why I kind of liked this game, because it was the slimmest of margins type game.
Yep.
You know, they had to go all the way there. You know,
they have never, that was the first time all season that they ran an empty set with Brady in the shotgun with that personnel grouping on the field.
I mean, it's crazy.
So there's no way that the Rams could have known it was coming, because they've never seen it before.
Yeah, that's crazy. And that's kind of the beauty of some of these Super Bowls that you've seen, you know, with how difficult the level of difficulty it is just to move the ball on some of these defenses or stop an offense. I thought it was pretty impressive.
Yeah, and I think the other thing is that, you know, as much as Gronk has declined a little bit this year compared to past years, when you have a stud tight end like that, and he's one, you know, let's call him 1A to Julian Edelman being 1B as your top two options. When you have a tight end that can win in between the numbers, and you have a number one receiver that's not a perimeter guy, you can go to this kind of empty set formation and you can get your number one guy on a linebacker. And they got Julian Edelman on a linebacker on the first play of the three-play sequence. And then they got Gronk on a linebacker on the big catch at the end to put them in the red zone. So when you have kind of – they have unique personnel. You know, they have unique players where there's not – they don't have an outside guy like a Brandon Cooks or an Antonio Brown or someone like that or Julio Jones. They have a tight end and a slot receiver. And when you're not ready for it and you're not prepared to kind of cover that out of your base personnel grouping, it gets confusing. And you could tell the Rams defense, first of all, they got Edelman on that little juke route on a Mike linebacker on the very first play, and he just torched him for 13 yards. And then with Gronk, they got him on Corey Littleton, the other linebacker, and they were able to beat him again. And I just think that having that unique personnel is what makes the Patriots a little bit different than some other offenses that these teams face week in and week out, where they're not, you know, they're not running your standard shotgun empty formations. You know, it's a lot of different looks that you can't really expect to see. And then, you know, obviously when Tom Brady in the clutch, it kind of felt like it when I, you know, we were watching it, I'm sure it felt like this for you too, that, okay, it was 3-3. The game had been ugly on the offensive side of the ball for both teams. But, like, who would you rather have, Tom Brady or Jared Goff?
Right.
High game in the Super Bowl. It kind of felt like the Patriots had were in the spot that they wanted to be in, even though, obviously, they could have been up by a little bit more with a little bit of, you know, better execution and some of the, you know, drives that they had earlier in the game. But they certainly were in a spot where you knew that they had the money guy, and it showed in that last fourth quarter that Gronk, Edelman, and Brady, and then we'll get to the running game closing it out in a second. But those three guys, you were taking them over Jared Goff, Brandon Cooks, and Todd Gurley any day of the week.
Easily, every time.
Yeah. All right, and then in the running game, that's what closed out. They ran out the stadium with the Lombardi Trophy, which was really cool. For this team, I think in particular, because I think a lot of people are saying, like, well, they were a run first team. I like to say that they relied on their offensive line, because really the rock of the offense all season long, and especially down the stretch, has been the offensive line, both keeping Brady clean and run blocking. It's both ways. And to run the ball like they did on that final drive, just moving Aaron Donald completely out of the way on that first one to Michelle, and then running right behind James Devlin to end it with Burkett. It was great to see them close it out by just running it right down their throats.
Yeah, exactly. You know, they get backed up, you know, to the shadow of their goal line, right? So, you know, it's something like a emotional type of way to win a game, right? You know what I mean? There's something a little bit more surgical about winning it through the passing game and getting it out like that. You know, to be able to close it out, like, you know, and not have to rely on the defense one more time with that, you know, it was pretty impressive. You know, I mean, just go back to the draft. I mean, they draft a tailback in the first round, and, you know, I mean, you know, there's – You wonder, like, well, what, you know, what's the, you know, the payoff going to be or something like that, you know? They feature the fullback so much this year. You know, I know they've always had, you know, Devlin for a while now, so, but it's, you know, they really made a commitment to running the ball, you know, and being able to, you know, have it, you know, be effective in multiple ways. And, you know, when you can close out a game running the ball and just enforcing your will on the other team, it's a little bit more satisfying, isn't it? You know, hey, I'm gonna come downhill like this, you know, see if you can stop me. And they couldn't. That's just another way that this game was just a little bit more satisfying, you could say.
Yeah, and I think the offensive line, bravo. Like, I wish that they could get an award or share the MVP or something like that, because for three straight games in the playoffs, they played near perfect football.
Right.
From start to finish against three of the best defensive fronts in the league, some of the best pass rushers, the defensive player of the year in Aaron Donald, and they were the better unit. They were the better. They won the trenches every single time. And whether Tom Brady has, you know, was at his best or not, or if Rob Gronkowski was there or not, or whatever the case may be, they could rely on running the football, and they knew that Brady was going to be clean.
Yeah.
And to have that kind of, you know, confidence in the offensive line, or the ability to lean against the offensive line like that, I mean, it was everything. And as much as, you know, I'm Dante Scarnecchia's biggest fan, everyone knows that, but you got to give the players credit. Like, those five guys, I mean, that was as good of a display of offensive line play as you're ever going to see from a five-man unit. And the guys in the trenches, the guys in the interior, Shaq Mason, Joe Tooney. Joe Tooney had a couple of opportunities late in this game to block Aaron Donald one-on-one, and he won. You know, he beat Donald. And to just have that is just, I mean, it was an incredible effort from start to finish for those guys. And Trent Brown, I hope they can bring him back. He's obviously going to make a whole lot of money for himself in the offseason.
Right.
And Marcus Cannon, obviously, was a big part of it too. And those five guys, I mean, they deserve something. They deserve like MVP or offensive line of the year. Give it to them instead of the Rams, who won it. At the NFL honors, I think it's a fan vote, so I don't get into it. But it was crazy to see how great they played. And you just kind of, whenever you have an offensive line playing at that level, you still kind of have a little bit of seed in doubt of your head, in your head, that's like, all right, all it takes is one move, right? Like, all it takes is one Aaron Donald pass rush move, or one move by Chris Jones or D Ford or whatever, or Melvin Ingram, and a great offensive line game can kind of come crashing down. You know, like in the Super Bowl last year, the offensive line played great, and it was that one play by, you know, by Brandon Graham that decided it. So you kind of had that feeling, and it just never came. It just never, they never cracked.
Yeah, and like you said, for the entire playoff run too. It's not just the Super Bowl. They played against good defenses, defensive fronts this entire playoff run, and it was like pitching a perfect game almost. You know, but you know, those guys will, you know, you're going up against in the Super Bowl, you know, Aaron Donald and Ndamukong Suh, Michael Brockers, you know, I mean,
Dante Fowler. We're talking about first round picks across the board, and you got like an undrafted center and Trent Brown, who nobody wanted, and Marcus Cannon was a sixth round pick. And I mean, that's where Scar comes into it, right? Like in the development of these players. I mean, they all have talent and they all have skill, don't get me wrong, but the Patriots' ability and Scarnecchia's ability to get these guys in here and develop them, and kind of, it's more so the chemistry too.
Right.
Like they work so well in tandem together, and they're every step, it seems like it's in unison, and it's for a purpose. I mean, it is just, they went against a star-studded defensive line 3 weeks in a row, and everybody was kind of like, oh, well, if you get to Brady, you know, you can win the game, and they just never got to Brady.
Never got to Brady, but especially their work in the run game too. I mean, like, if the Patriots go three and out and have to punt, who knows what happens, you know?
I was thinking that maybe McVay would go for two.
Right.
He has those balls. So, like, I was like, oh, crap. They're going to score a touchdown, and McVay's going to go for two, and the Rams are going to win this game 11-10.
Right.
Like, that's, like, what the negative, you know, side of me was thinking.
Yeah, I mean, every football coach in a situation like that would love to be able to do what the Patriots did, but it's so hard.
Yeah.
You almost never see it happen because it just never happens.
You know, somebody out there is going to say, but they didn't pick up the third and one. So, you know, we got to mention that. And then on the sideline, Brady turns to Belichick and he's like, why don't we just kick the field goal? Like, we go up 10 points, the game is over. And Belichick's like, yeah, you're right, kick the field goal.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. What were you thinking at that point? Because I kind of wanted them to go for it.
I understand. So what I was thinking was what I just said was that if they don't make it and the Rams do score a touchdown, then McVay's going to go for two.
Right.
And I knew he would go for two. I knew he wouldn't play for overtime. So yeah. I was thinking that the best case scenario was to go up 10. I was like, you know, I felt at the moment that maybe going for it and just, hey, we have half a yard or you know, 3/4 of a yard for the Super Bowl. Let's just get it and kneel it out. Would it be good? But you know what? To be honest with you, after Miami, I don't want those, like, you know, weird leads, right? Yeah, like, I don't want like a 7-point lead. I don't want a 4-point lead. Like, I want this to be a 2-score game.
Yeah.
And I think that any Patriots fan that was watching that game and at the end there, when they're driving and they're up 10-3, that wasn't thinking about Miami is lying to themselves. Because we were all thinking about Miami and that, yeah. You know, and how that it could, you know, all it would take is one, you know, big play like that and you could be losing the Super Bowl. And, you know, you look back on it and you kind of would question why didn't Belichick kick the field goal.
Yeah. Yeah. It was, because the one thing I was thinking was like, hey, look, they get the first down here, game's over.
Yeah.
Just take a bunch of knees. But then I think it was Romer on the broadcast was talking about, well, you know, they do have Aaron Donald and Ndamukong Suh here. Like, there's some interior guys here that be able to take away that sneak or you know, maybe, you know, whatever. Yeah. So there wasn't a certainty of them getting it. So, yeah. So in the end, I mean, regardless, it worked out. But that was another thing about this game, man. There were every little thing mattered. It was so tight from start to finish in terms of those little decisions. The margin of error was so small, you know, on both sides of the ball. Even the special teams.
Yeah, I gotta mention the punters. So, the
punting was amazing. Yeah. you know, it was just.
I think Ryan Allen got a little bit hurt feelings that everybody was, even his own coach, was pumping up Johnny Hecker so much.
Yeah,
so he just like went out there and had the game of his life.
Yeah, it was incredible. But that's the type of game it was. You know, there was no aspect of the game where everything was nip and tuck the entire way. So it had, I mean, you know, it wasn't a, you know, game where the score kept going back and forth for 4 quarters and there's these great, you know, huge swings of emotion, but it was just sort of, it was inch football. You know what I mean? It was very, It was very tense, you know, from start to finish. I kind of enjoyed that part of it.
Yeah, and that's why the punting mattered so much, because in a game of inches, field position
was
every full of times that they were able to pin the Rams deep, and Matthew Slater and Ryan Allen combined on a few of those. And one of them was the one that bounced right to Slater when he set himself up there. Was like, I've never seen a more perfect, you know, punt to pin somebody deep. It like bounced straight up at the 5-yard line and like right into Slater's hands at like the 3. Yeah. It was like the perfect sandwich. I was like, that's unbelievable.
I know.
And like it was, the whole game was like that. And I know Johnny Hecker broke the record for the longest punt on like the worst punt of the game probably. And it just happened to roll like 65 yards. But that, when in a game like this, when there's no scoring and it's a game of inches, to have the punters really come out and punt like the way that they did was really crucial for their teams. And obviously Belichick would be the first one to tell you, you know, how important punters are. So it was one of those games where, like you said, it was a game of inches and it was a game of like all the other things besides the quarterbacks really playing well in the offensive play.
Oh, yeah.
Mattered so much, and every little defensive nuance and every little movement by the defense, and even to the point where a formation change, a simple, you know, formation substitution was the difference in the game, because it was like such a minute, you know, margin of error, like you said. And I mean, look, I understand people that watch the NFL all year long. I think there was the most points scored in the season all year this year, and then you get a 13-3 Super Bowl, and everyone's just kind of like, oh, well, that kind of stunk. you know, and there was not a ton of scoring. There's only one touchdown. The two teams only reached the red zone once. I get that, and I felt it too, you know, watching the game, especially in the first half. I was like, okay, this is a pretty lousy football game.
Right.
And but really, when you sit back and you think about it, this was not a bad football game. No, it just wasn't the type of football game that we're used to in 2019.
It was really well played, and two teams, you know, going up against each other and not allowing each other to do what they do best. For the most part, it was just so, you know, there are a lot of games where it's just poor football. You know, this wasn't poor football. This was just nobody really was able to let the other offense get going.
Yeah.
You know? And it was
the defenses. Yeah.
Yeah.
And Bill Belichick and Wade Phillips. You know, we talked a lot about Sean McVay, I think, coming into this game, and obviously Tom Brady and Josh McDaniels, and all deservedly so. But I think that what we saw here, you know, on Sunday was that Belichick and Wade Phillips are two of the best defensive minds in the history of the game.
Yeah.
And they were going at it in this game, and we might have underestimated the fact that that brain power was on the defense side of the ball was there.
Yeah.
And it was really, you know, the two game plans by both defenses were what turned this into, you know, kind of a stalemate.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. And it didn't always look pretty, but it was, but if you're looking at it from their perspective, it was pretty nice looking.
Yeah. When I came down from the press box, I was, you know, thinking to myself, like, all right, like, everyone's going to skewer that game. Like, they're going to say it was boring. They're going to say that there was no scoring and that the quarterbacks played awful and all this stuff. And then you get down to the field and you kind of, you talk to the players and you see how excited and how distraught the Rams were and how excited the Patriots were. And you're like, okay, well, this was still the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like, and like one team still lost the championship and one team still won it. And then it kind of puts it in perspective for you of like, okay, like, they don't care that it was 13-3.
Yeah.
Like, no one cares that this was a defensive battle that was playing in the game or coaching in the game.
Yeah.
And you know,
you're not looking at it from entertainment value.
No.
They're like your wins and loss.
Yeah. Yeah. And a lot of the players even said, like, okay, like, we get that a lot of people probably weren't entertained by this game, but we just won the Super Bowl. So, like, you know, F you. Like, they don't really give a shit. So I think that really put it into perspective. And you know, I mean, listen, this dynasty and this team to win six championships in what has it been, like 18 years of Tom Brady being the quarterback of the team, being nine of them. I mean, we can put it in perspective all we want. I know a lot of people have already probably done this, but it's just an incredible team to watch. And, you know, I think the biggest thing is that even when they lose this game, even when they've lost the Super Bowl, you know, obviously losing it three times, they always are in it. It's always a game, and there's always like a few bounces here or there that could have gone the other way, that could have decided the game. And to be this competitive in a one game playoff, this isn't the NBA where you have 4 out of 7,
you know,
to win it, where you can have a dud and still kind of recover from it later on in the series. It's not even, you know, any of the other sports where, you know, you can lose a baseball game, like the Red Sox lost 3 straight to the Yankees and then, you know, came back. You lose one in football, it's over. And right. This team to just continuously stay in the game, stay in the moment, keep the game close enough, and have a chance at the end to really be 9-0 if you know they some of the bounces went the other way. That, I mean, it's incredible. Yeah. And you know, it's awesome to see. And for you and I, I'm sure I'm speaking for you here, but it's just to cover it is incredible. Yeah.
It's bananas. You know, like you can't really put perspective on it right now because it's still happening.
And it's never been done. Like there's nothing to compare it to.
Right. Right. It's but the amount of compelling games that have been played over these years, even when they lose, like last year's Super Bowl was so compelling, even though they lost.
Yeah.
We come back this year and even though this game wasn't as like exciting, you know, as some of the other games. It was still really compelling, and you know, they just it should, you previously you wouldn't have thought this type of dominance or you know, high level play over year after year after year would be possible. You know, yeah. I didn't think that this was sort of like how football teams could do it in this age. And you just don't see it anywhere else, or most places, but it's very impressive. You really have to sort of sit back and awe what this organization's been able to do.
Yeah, and I think that this game too, in a lot of ways, summed up that it's Brady and Belichick. It's not right. Just one, because Belichick's defense and Flores' defense pitched a perfect game. They were exceptional, and they were the reason why the Patriots won this game. But in the fourth quarter, you know, Brady still made the plays. Right. And you know, Belichick still needed the quarterback to go out there and make a few, you know, big-time throws to win the game. So this was even though Brady didn't have his best game and the offense only scored 13 points, this is a great example of Brady and Belichick working together and each giving them their best when they needed it. And obviously Belichick being it through the whole four quarters, but Brady also just, you know what, handed to me on a silver platter. You know, the defense only allowed 3 points. Like, I couldn't have asked for anything more than for Belichick to give me this opportunity to only, you know, to really only have to score one touchdown to win the Super Bowl, but he still delivered.
Yeah. And yeah, I mean, somebody's got to make that throw to Gronkowski, which was perfect.
Yeah.
You know? It's not like you're going to have anybody do that. And it's, and even though Brady didn't come out and like skewer the defense, it wasn't necessarily because he was, you know, playing poorly. It was because like he was going up against the, you know, a mastermind who is trying to, you know, take away what he does best. It was just a great game plan by Phillips and executed very well by their players. So
not to take away anything away from the Patriots defense, but Jared Goff kind of anchored his offense in this game.
Yeah.
And Tom Brady didn't. Even though he wasn't at his best, it was still at such a high level of not being his best that it wasn't like he torpedoed the entire offense. Whereas for Jared Goff, there was a lot of play. I mean, Jared Goff could have had like two or three interceptions in this game. You know, there's just a couple of plays that, you know, Dante Hightower dropped.
Oh, yeah.
And then the John Simon batted one at the line of scrimmage that if it had gone through, it would have easily been a pick. You know, there's a lot of plays like that in this game. He missed a couple of open receivers. He missed Brandon Cooks. You know, Brady did not have that type of game. Brady didn't have his best Brady game, but he certainly was not, you know, anchoring down the offense like too, because after the game, he spoke to Mike Silver in pretty big detail about it, and he was just like, I couldn't do it. I didn't have a grasp of what they were, you know, what we needed to do and what they needed to do. And I just, you know, you could obviously tell that he felt like he left his teammates down and, you know, you feel bad for him, but I think the Rams will be back. I do. I think the Rams have a nice future ahead of them. You know, but at the same time, you make it once, right. And you can't, sometimes that's all. It's so hard to get back to that game that, you know,
when you lose that game, if you go all that way and lose it, just the emotional toll it takes out of you, I think is something that a lot of regular non-pro football players can't really get a grasp of. of what that's probably like. I can only imagine what's going through their heads right now, just because, you know, that's a tough way to lose too. You know, because it just didn't work for them. But
yep. All right. Well, we could talk all day about this game, I'm sure.
we've gone pretty far today.
Per usual, not a huge surprise. But we are going to, you know, go for number 7 now, but believe it or not, we could still want more and want to win another one. So the Patriots obviously will have a lot of decisions to make in the offseason. They got a slew of free agents, you know, Trey Flowers, Trent Brown being the big ones, but there's a laundry list of guys that are free agents or restricted free agents on this team. A lot of decisions for Bill Belichick to make. Tom Brady only has one more year left on his contract. So an extension for him or something like that might be in the works. We don't know if Rob Gronkowski is going to retire or not. It kind of seems like it's leaning towards he'll be back. But right now he's on such a high from winning the Super Bowl that I think it's impossible to really make that decision. There's a lot of change that could happen on this team, or there could be no change, you know, but there's going to be some players that are not back. Let me, you know, put it to you that way. So it's going to be an interesting offseason. Obviously we have the draft where the Patriots have 12 draft picks. So a lot of those guys that, you know, are kind of question marks, when you have a draft class, it's going to probably be at least 9 or 10 guys deep. You're going to have to get rid of some guys to make some room on the roster for all those.
Right.
Picks. So that's going to be a big part of it too. And especially I think they have 6 picks in the top 100 of the draft. So all those guys, I'm sure that they're going to probably trade something to the future to 2020 or something like that, because that's just what Belichick does. But all those guys that get drafted in the first 3 rounds are essentially roster locks. So you gotta move around some guys to get those guys on the roster. Obviously, Adam and I, that's our wheelhouse. We're going to be doing a lot of draft stuff from here on out. I believe I'm going to be going to the combine, so that will be cool.
Nice.
Let's talk to some of these guys, get to, you know, get my clipboard and stopwatch on as well, and keep track of some of these things. I'll be sure to talk to Hunter Renfrow for like 90 minutes if it's possible. And some of the other guys.
Isabella.
Yeah, Andy Isabella and Hunter Renfrow and I are going to get some beers. We're going to have some conversations, and I'm going to tell them, you know, all about how great it is to play for the Patriots if they didn't know already. But until then, I just want to say thank you to everybody for listening this year and for following along with us. Adam and I absolutely love doing this podcast, and we have a blast with it. And obviously all of our great guests that we had on all year long too. It's been a good year, and obviously it's great to cover a team that wins as often as the Patriots do. That you know, certainly helps. And we're not covering a team that went 3-13 for the last 5 years or whatever the case may be. So that makes it even more enjoyable. But all the listeners, why we do it, all the guests, a huge thank you to all of you guys as well. And we'll be back. We're not going to be gone for long. So, you know, stay here. Nobody else, I'm going to brag for a second. Nobody else is going to cover the draft like we are.
Nobody
else is going to get as detailed.
Dude, I've already started looking.
Yeah. Nobody's going to get as detailed as us. And I promise you, from a Patriots perspective, no one else is going to have as much Patriots draft content as Adam and I over the next couple of months, looking at prospects that could be potential Patriots. I'm going to brag again. I think that last year we nailed at least a couple, maybe 3 or 4 of the picks. I mean, we obviously, everyone in the world had them picking Braxton Berrios, so I won't take a ton of credit for that. But Sony Michel and Isaiah Wynn are guys that we talked about a lot. I know that. And I think we probably mentioned Duke Dawson once or twice as well. So we usually have a pretty good feel for it. And we'll at least mention names of guys that the Patriots might take. Christian Sam, I think, was another guy that we talked about when we talked about linebackers.
We did.
So it was
comprehensive. Look, we don't leave stones unturned when it comes to the draft.
No, we're the Bill Belichick of draft media. You know, but without the unbelievable, you know, 6 Super Bowls.
Yeah, they just need to listen to us and then draft the guys that we tell them to.
Although, if they listened to us, to be fair, they probably would have taken Lamar Jackson. Maybe Isaiah Wynn and Sony Michel were the right picks.
Yeah.
Especially Sony. I mean, we still love Isaiah. We'll see what he can bring to the team next year.
But until next time, signing off for Adam Kirchin, I'm Evan Lazar. Thanks for listening.